Hi, guys, we're gonna go ahead and get started. It is Tuesday, October 20th at 6:06 PM, and we are holding our council meeting in the Deerfield Community Center. We will start with a pledge led by Councilmember Ellsworth, and then I will give the introduction.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we are thankful for the opportunity that we have today to gather together as a council to discuss the needs of the city. We are grateful for this beautiful city that we live in, and we're grateful for all of those who work for the city and who serve the city in variety of ways. We ask that you bless us this evening, that we discuss the input agenda, that our hearts and minds will be open, and that the decisions that are effective for our mission, for our community, now and moving forward. We pray for these things in the name of Jesus Christ, amen. All right. I will take an approval of the meeting's agenda. I move that we approve the meeting's agenda. Motion made by Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes, we'll move on to public comment, and nobody is here, so we will close the public comment portion of our meeting and move on to the consent agenda, which is an approval of the minutes from the September 1st and September 15th, 2020 work session in city council meetings. I move that we approve the consent agenda. Motion made by Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes, so we'll move on to items 5 and 6, which are city reports and business, starting with Mr. Goodwin.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple recreation notes. We've had a very successful flag football, soccer, and tot soccer programs this fall, coordinating those with the coronavirus outbreak and those measures that were in place. We appreciate the cooperation of parents and team members in complying with those measures, and we look forward to future programs. Golf is continuing to stay very busy. The weather is still very nice for golf, so we are still seeing a lot of tee times, which is great. We're projecting that after the end of this month, we'll be almost to 85% of our annual projected budget, which is kind of unprecedented. So look for some budget amendments here in the future. And we want to thank our staff because they've had to do a lot of hard work that they've done through this pandemic as well in terms of taking the precautions and sanitizing the carts as each one of them come in. So I want to thank them. Our junior jazz program is open and it's filling up fast. We've limited participation this year just due to limited gym space and having to, again, comply with coronavirus measures that the state has put in place. But we appreciate the support of Alpine School District as we've worked with the principals on those programs. And we'll be talking more about some of those coronavirus measures that the state has implemented later tonight. And then finally, our ski bus program is set up, and that was set up to begin in February. We've worked with Brighton to make sure that they're also taking those same precautions and that we can assure a successful four-week program. So look for those programs on site. Let me add one more thing. We've had a number of vandalism. We've had quite a bit of vandalism at Harvey Park, and we've brought this up before. We closed the bathroom for a bit of a time in order to replace some of the fixtures that were damaged. We opened it up again, and it's been trashed four more times since we've opened it. So we're going to be closing bathrooms this Friday as it's going to freeze this weekend and look to implement some measures to hopefully prevent some of that in the future.
We don't have the security systems coming along?
Yeah, we've got a bid on it, and we're going to do a budget adjustment in November to move forward with that. We anticipate that's going to be installed over the winter.
Okay. Would that be a video surveillance?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Dennis.
Nothing to report.
All right. Nothing for me either. Councilmember Anderson. I just have a couple of things. From my Utah Lake Commission meeting, I failed to let me know last time that they are developing a wetland on the north end of the lake, and they're trying to move wetlands from inside the city boundaries over closer to the lake. I don't know how you move wetlands, but that's their plan. That's what they're doing. Which seems really interesting to me. They want to concentrate the wetlands closer to the lake. The Utah County applied for two different trail projects from MAG, and they were funded. So they're have a long-term plan to make a trail system that goes completely around Utah Lake. You could bike all the way around the lake or hike wherever it is you want to do. And that is, they're looking at 2023 to 2024. includes 2,000 acre feet of water for evaporation each day from Utah Lake. That's enough for 2,000 families worth of water per year, which was mind-boggling to me. The last thing I have to share is from my Central Utah 911 meeting. A lot of information, but the thing I want to bring back to you is that they are on track to take 100,000 911 calls this year, and September was the busiest call volume ever. That also kind of takes into account that they take on Pleasant Grove's calls, but still I think that's eventually going to affect our budget, where we get charged for our call volumes. That's just something to look for in the future as far as budget goes. That's all I have. All right, thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth.
I'm not being truthful.
Councilmember Miller.
Just vote, turn in your ballots.
Thank you. That's it. All right, then we'll move on to our scheduled items. The first one being a review action on issuing a request for qualifications for a citywide fiber project.
I know there's some people in the community that are really anticipating the city moving forward on this in terms of, you know, wanting to see shovels in the ground or fiber in the ground, so to speak. And we've prepared an RFP, and that's in your packet. But one thing I want you to consider is we worked with to develop this RFQ. Section RFP, and I apologize for that mistake. For a citywide fiber project, and you've seen the Utopia presentation that they gave with the survey results. And so you see that there's a demand in the community for better network connectivity with the greater world, I guess. I know I can speak for the city that our buildings are, we really struggle. This is an area we really struggle with. We're not connected to any cable, and we reached out to Comcast, and it's going to cost about $50,000 to connect our buildings to cable, and we think that's a little bit ridiculous. So we're as interested in this as anyone. So the proposal is for fiber to the premise. That's what FTTP stands for, project in the city. And this RFP requires a proposal design, a citywide fiber network that allows for open access to multiple internet service providers, which would be owned by the city after construction. And we are projecting that the design must allow for mirrored speeds. That's not necessarily what's always offered, but that it has that capacity that's gig up, gig down, I believe. And we're wanting you to review the proposed RFP and to make any changes that you feel necessary. And I bring this up because the RFP that we have is provided to the city from other entities. And the other entities, they've modeled this RFP to meet the needs of their community. And I think that that's a conversation that we need to have before we launch an RFP. And that's why I'm asking you to table this tonight. I met with another group called Strata. They work primarily out of the Uinta Basin, and they're working on establishing a greater footprint here in Utah Valley along the Wasatch Front. But they were looking at, hey, the city should really look into some of these public-private partnerships and developing a model that works for you. And you remember in the Utopia proposal that we have to hit a certain take rate, and everything above that take rate stays with Utopia. I think that there's other models out there that the city should explore. There's also financial benefits, but there's also financial risks in terms of what that looks like. And so we need to evaluate the financing options as well as any agreements that need to be evaluated alongside financing. So we've talked about in the past about LifeHub, but it's been about almost a year since we talked about that, but that's still an entity that's we need to talk about. If we don't want to go with Utopia, if we want to go with another firm. There's other options, is what I'm saying. Part of hearing alternate proposals is to hear what different models look like in order to inform our models so that it meets the needs of the city best. And when we're creating our own fiber network, you can have better info on how your own model will work, it will run once the RFP is issued. Once the RFP is issued, you can't change it. So that's why I say I have some hesitancy. We've taken the RFP from another entity. This one specifically came from Elk Ridge. And we've kind of pulled out Elk Ridge to put in Cedar Hills and kind of changed some of the parameters. But ultimately, it's theirs. So this, I'm giving you this as an example. This design criteria, the points, how you award the RFP is right here. But they've weighted this based on their preferences, right? This isn't from us. So if we were to launch this RFP, we're basically launching the RFP with how they feel about their network. So what I'd like you to do is to review this RFP and to come back with some suggestions on what you feel like needs to be done. The RFP, like I said, comes from another entity, and they decided that this was the best model for them, and I think we need to find this, we need to have that same discussion about what model works best for us. In terms of specs, what we're requiring, does the city want to own the network after the bond payment? I think you would want to own the network after the bond payment, given that you pay for it. But also, what happens to anything above the take rate? Because there are the entity that I spoke with, Strata, they spoke specifically that once you meet your debt service with them, anything above the take rate that's required, the city can decide what to do with that money. Because you're locked into a contract that you pay for the O&M operation maintenance with them, once that's met, then you're no longer obligated to share that money with them. So you have a better financial stake. Like I said, that also comes with a bigger risk. Well, at least it could come with a bigger risk. But I'd like you to hear their proposal, and I'd like you to kind of take into consideration what they're proposing versus what you heard from Utopia, and then build that into this model. A lot of cities are talking about fiber, but they're spending a lot of time talking about fiber. So I would hate to just do this in two meetings and launch, and then go back retroactively and say, I wish we would have done something different. This is a big decision for the city, so I want you to be well informed when we hit go, that you know we're comfortable with the model that we're pushing forward. Any questions? I hope you've had a chance to read the RFP. Any questions on the RFP itself? I don't have many issues with the RFP. I just want to make sure that you're okay with it, and that it's not a one-size approach to fiber that only one entity can bid on. I'd rather be a competitive bid.
So, I guess what you're asking is, I didn't have any problems with what I saw. Either your testimony to maybe reweigh these values to better match our vision.
Yeah. I think that's primarily one thing that should be done, is to say, okay, when awarding a contract, what do we feel is most important? You know, looking at this, they say that the alignment with these technical preferences is very important, and I would agree that that's very important. But the lowest thing on their list here is the cost of continued operations and maintenance. And you might feel that that's a little bit more important than the weight that they have given it. So I would like you to play with those numbers and say, where do my preferences lie?
I would assume that number is very low because they are leaning on this is for Utopia, Utopia to take care of all that stuff.
In any case, I don't think that that's something that the city should take on.
Right, we have to find the.
So if whether it's Utopia or some other entity, I think we want to look at their current operations and maintenance and say, you have high customer satisfaction. Like what Utopia talked about, the retention rate of customers on Utopia, I think that's a big feather in their cap. Well, what about other entities? Do they have the same kind of retention with their customers? When someone puts in a call for service, how long does it take them to get out? Because I can tell you that as a city, if this is a city network and it's failing, they're going to call the city. And so I have very little control over when Utopia goes out. So I'd like to whoever's running that O&M, I would like for them to be somebody that represents the city very well.
When we set out RFPs for other services, have we put together a point scoring system like this?
Yeah, in many cases we do. Yeah, most cases we do. Usually, sometimes it just comes down to two things. So when we did the I think it was the legal RFQ. It was just based on RFP that we have to do the point system. RFQs you don't. More of some qualifications, but on like the legal one, it came down to two items. It was the cost for service and the experience. So this one's a little bit more nuanced.
Questions? questions in the council, are you comfortable then tabling this item to go through this scoring system and maybe come up with some additional questions that would change of something that's not necessarily strictly related?
We've got some of your schedule to come to the city council meeting on November 17th, so it's not a terrible delay, but I'd like to hear some other group of perspective and then revisit this.
I'm good with that.
And this other group has indicated that they are interested in responding to the RFP, but my concern is I don't want an RFP that is tailored to only one entity, so only one entity can respond to it. I'd like to be actual competitive RFP.
Do you want these suggestions, Mike?
Whatever you can.
I would say the earliest we could vote on it would be in December.
You got some time.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and make a motion to table this.
Motion made by Councilor Ellsworth. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. We'll move on to item number 8, which is a review action on a resolution approving an interlocal cooperation agreement with American Fork City, Highland City, and Pleasant Grove City to facilitate the construction of the Mill Ditch Pipeline Project.
Yes. The Mill Ditch, let me give you some background. The Mill Ditch comes out of this scenario looking down. This is hole 10. This is Canyon Road. It's SR 92, and this is Mount Vail Repair and Core Canyon. This light blue line is the current configuration of the ditch for basically the Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company's service ditch. And it comes out, there's a little weir there that controls the water, and then it comes in front of hole 10, it creates this nice little water feature, and then runs along the edge of that slope all the way around the golf course. American Fork has been working on a project up American Fork Canyon, restoring the water line, the culinary water line, and their existing line comes down, it's the same, comes through that same weir area, and then it conveniently traverses the center of all of our holes here, right? So it's right down the middle of the fairway. We really don't like that. And when they're replacing those, we really don't want them to dig up our fairways.
Is that a pipe right through the middle of it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Do we know what kind it is? Is it a PVC pipe?
I don't. Do you know what kind of pipe that is that's existing?
I've never been told
what it is. But what this agreement does is it helps us because it abandons that line in place. And they would reconstruct their...
Did we work around? I mean, that existed before the golf course, so yeah. We worked around it when that whole thing was built.
It would abandon that line permanently, and that new water line would be constructed parallel to the new ditch that they're piping. Then hit their water tanks, which is convenient for us because if they were to have a water line break, then they would have to dig up our fairway and like in the middle of golf, and that would be catastrophic for golf. So this project concerns us because we get a lot of our shareholders in the Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company. We own about 10% of the water shares there, but we also take our, this is the only spot for the Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company that we can take our water from. They have a few sources that they can take water from. American Fork Canyon, Bright Creek Canyon, Battle Creek, and Road Creek Canyon. But this is the only water that can get water to Secret Hill, so this is critical to us that we get this done right. They've secured funding for this project, so it's approved federal grant, I believe. And it pipes the project from the weir, mouth of the canyon, up to this point here down by the water tanks. That's as much as they got funding for. And what this does is it pipes it, and they're going to save some money, they're going to save some water shares. This is a gravel pit, and so they're estimating they're losing, I think they said 1,000 acre feet of water. Is that a day? Is that a year?
No,
it can't be a day.
1,000 acre feet over this season.
Over this season, yeah. So part of the agreement is because Pleasant Grove is the one that has really spearheaded this agreement, and Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company cannot be a part of any of the locals, they're not a municipal body. Pleasant Grove is set to reap many of the benefits from doing the work on it, in that they will have access, they'll have a guaranteed flow from that water that's saved. Jeff and I and Craig went and met with Pleasant Grove, with their attorney and their engineers, to talk about our concerns in that project, just given that we don't want to see our shares diluted in creation of new shares. We found out that that was not what they were doing. They're not creating new water shares with this water that they're saving. Once that was resolved, I think that it kind of cleared the way for this agreement to move forward. Additionally, one thing that's really nice is that the agreement allows for the city to take American Fork irrigation water out of the Pleasant Grove irrigation ditch, which hasn't been allowed before. So following this agreement, I think the city will want to pursue an agreement with American Fork irrigation company to be able to transport their water through this ditch. That's water that we own shares in that we actually haven't been able to access to that. So we're excited about the prospect there. But the ditch project, this is phase one, and phase two will then come around. This is kind of bright green line that continues around that bluff to the south. But they want to move forward on this. Some cities have already adopted this agreement. They adopted it last week. A couple cities are adopting it next week. I think the other city is adopting it today. So they want to move forward, shovels in the ground this winter. They have to do the project during the winter irrigation season, which started October 15th and ends April 15th, and they've committed to the city that they're going to try to minimize the disruption to the Gulf as much as they can. So while there may be work along here and along the base of this bluff, we're going to try to still allow golfers to be golfing. When they get to this part that's in front of this hole, it will have to shut down the golf course. So hopefully when that gets done during the winter time, the golf course is shut down anyway. One kind of drawback that this water feature will remain intact, but it will probably very rarely see water in it, just given that they're piping it. There's the option for the city to spend a great deal of money that would divert the water out of the pipe through the water feature and then back into the pipe. We declined to spend, I think it was like $25,000 to do that. We said, you know what, no thanks. We plumbed it so that if that was something that we really wanted to do, we could go back retroactively and do it at a cheaper cost. But so as a golfer, Mike, you'll see less water in that ditch. You'll see water in the ditch during runoff season, and that's about it.
Yeah, I've had discussions with the golf people. I hate to see that, but maybe for a much cheaper amount, we can figure out, we can be creative and figure out maybe we put a pond there or something. You know?
Yeah, there could be other options that come along. But
just a linear pond or something, you know, just to put a
could be
spray thing in there so that it keeps the water.
We didn't want to change the dynamic of the hole, though, which really is what the feedback we've gotten. So that's why, even though it would be kind of a dry creek, it'll still be a hazard and something that we hit over the fire.
I know there was concern also amongst the golf people, Brian and Greg and Wade and everybody, about that they are going to eliminate the water going through. Are all the trees going to die along there?
I think a lot of the trees will die because that's how they get water. I think you're going to see a lot of those trees die. And I don't know a way to get around that. Because as we have water shares, I'm really reluctant to use them to save those trees.
Yeah.
I think as a golf course, as we see those trees die, I think that we can look at the edge of the golf course, that fringe area, and start planting, start a vegetation plan along there to begin to replace those trees.
I mean, it's not disaster, right? It's pretty now, and a lot of those trees are dead anyway. I mean, really, a lot of dead wood should be cleared out of there somewhat over time, but that's expensive.
So you'll see a 40-foot wide utility road on that side of it, just at the base of that bluff. So I would like to see some trees being planted along there just to kind of mask that road. You won't see people on the road very much, but it'll be there.
Oh, they're going to cut a road into the hillside there?
No, it's not going to cut it in. It's just.
Oh, yeah,
there's trees aren't
there. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. There actually is. I walked in there. Not that I ever hit a ball that way.
Lucky you. Jeff, is there anything you wanted to add?
No, I think that covers it quite well. I think we're good.
One of our few remaining concerns is that the pre-construction meeting, we need to have Greg and his staff there so that they can be able to plan around the construction and the golf, being able to service golfers.
You know, one other thought, and I just was thinking about this. We own all the water in the pond on the T box, the number 10, right?
10, yeah, that, but that's water that we've pumped out of the canyon while it's coming out of some irrigation structure.
I mean, who knows? I mean, you could run a 2-inch line up there and recirculate water from there.
Valuable. So there's, I think there's cheaper options out there.
I don't think you need to spend $20,000 to do that.
Another simple thing to look at, golf course.
And maybe you just put the pipe in their ditch that they dig, you know, we just supply the pipe, and then it's the future. Go ahead and come back in there and do it later.
If it was just running a 2-inch line of water out there.
Yeah.
That'd be too big.
I don't know. Get creative.
Any questions on the interlocal?
Chandler?
Yes.
There is a provision and footnote in the agreement, if it's still there, that Pleasant Grove Irrigation Company is committed to work with the city to resolve issues regarding number of shares we own and that sort of thing. So they were present at that meeting on that day, and they seemed to be very willing to resolve some of the issues that we have regarding shares and number of shares and the amount of money we can pay them on an annual basis.
Yeah, that goes back to the point of, like I said, there's multiple sources for Pleasant Grove Irrigation Water, but as a city, we only have access to one of the sources, but as 10% shareholders, we should be able to get all of our shares out of that one source, and we want to make sure that we are getting all of our shares out of one source. And you have to balance that with the demand or the need for water further down the line. So we may not be the only ones that can only get their water out of that canyon. So it's kind of a tricky situation with Pleasant Grove, but they fortunately have been very kind and willing to work with the city on resolving some of those concerns. They're not resolved in this agreement, but I think that's the dialogue is definitely open.
There are no other questions. I will take a motion on that resolution.
I'll move that we approve resolution 10-20-2020A, authorizing the mayor to sign an interlocal cooperative agreement in the city of Peterbilt, for city, county, city, Pleasant Grove City, village,
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? I'll second it. Seconded by Councilmember Anderson. Councilmember Miller?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson?
Aye.
Councilmember Gittes?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Move on to our final item, which is a discussion on state restrictions related to the coronavirus.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Last week, the governor announced, was it last week?
Yes.
Tuesday,
yes.
A week ago. The governor announced statewide changes to the health guidance that they were giving on the coronavirus. They were moving away from the red, orange, yellow, green phases to high, medium, low risk. And they're kind of setting some expectations on public gatherings, private public gatherings, and social gatherings. And you get a little bit crazy, but I think as a city, we're well positioned to quickly comply with the new directives from the state. Let me go over that. I mentioned a little bit about it in my manager's report. Greg and his staff, they've done a wonderful job of really rolling the punches when it comes to the coronavirus and the state, the ever-changing mandates from the state and from the county. For our recreation programs, if you're outside and you can't maintain a 6-foot social distance, then you have to wear a mask. Players obviously don't wear a mask, but we've set up protocols for when you start doing jazz that the spectators will wear a mask, we're going to check them in, we follow some sanitation measures in terms of not sharing the wristbands that they use for to show man-to-man defense and learning how the jazz program to work. But checking people in, like taking temperatures, there's a whole list of things. At our events, we've already been requiring people to wear masks for coming in for these private events. It's a public event, or it could be a public event, but we're the organization that is overseeing the event. So ultimately, it comes down to that compliance measure comes down to the city. And so really the only thing for events and recreation that is going to change is that they're going to be required to fill out this event management template, which shows basically who was at the event. Whether it's a wedding, whether it's a junior jazz event. So they'll just have to just check in, which I don't believe will be a big deal. It sounds like a lot of work, but I don't think it's going to be the worst thing to comply with. I'm a coach over at the Pleasant Grove Junior Jazz program for all my kids, and already check in there. And it takes a little bit, it seems to add a little bit of time to getting into the game. But I think this is kind of standard protocol for what City is doing right now. I went to a wedding last week, and not a single person other than my wife was wearing a mask. So I think that that's going to be a challenge. I talked to Greg. I think that the biggest thing that is going to happen is if people aren't, well, we back up. We've notified the rights. We've notified people that have reserved the event that this is a mandate from the state and that you will be expected to wear a mask. If you don't have masks, you can purchase them in the city at our cost. We're not looking at money on this. But you can give us an estimate of the number of guests that you've got. You can supply masks for your event. But we are mandating that masks be worn. We talked to the event hostesses, and they are requiring people to wear masks, and we're notifying them that if people aren't wearing masks, we will shut down their event. It's that serious. Same thing with junior jazz. If finding that a game is being played and spectators aren't wearing masks, we can shut down the game. And Greg sent out a communication to all of recreation groups that's last week that stated this session. They know the rules. They know what's going to happen going into the season. So I think that where we were already requiring masks to be worn, really the only major change for staff is following the event management template so that they can do contact tracing should there be an outbreak.
So first I want to see, as the council, did everybody see the update from Governor Herbert last week about this new program? Instead of the color codes, it's this high, moderate, low listed. So I anticipate Utah County is probably going to be in the high-risk category for some time based on our numbers.
Yeah.
So I think the chapter is exactly right. We've already been doing this. I think for me, it's two things that will actually change. The event management template will be filled out, and we'll have to actually enforce it. And you've got a plan already.
Yeah.
We haven't been enforcing it, and now we're at a point where we have to. And the reason why is it part of the requirements were that you actually can't be in groups larger than 10 unless there's organizational oversight. And if we're going to allow people to hold a wedding in our facility or do your jazz, we're the organizational oversight. So that puts the requirement on us to make sure that people are complying with the physical distancing, with the wearing of masks, that the event management template is being filled out. And so I think that's a little bit where it's going to be different for us is actual enforcement. And when I say enforcement, it is not calling the police to come enforce it. It is what Chandler said. It is saying, if you're having a wedding and see people aren't wearing masks, we're going to ask you to put on masks. And if people are refusing, then we're going to have to tell you the wedding's out, or we've got to close up, or the game's down council, or whatever the case is. It's not law enforcement enforcing it. It's us as the organization allowing this event to happen enforcing it.
I told Greg that I don't think that we pay our reps and our event hostesses enough for them to be the ones that shut these things down. So if it gets to that point, it's going to have to be myself or Greg that's coming in and saying, look, you put on masks or we're closing stuff.
And we'll kind of get out into the...
Mary's
talking. Can I answer them?
Let me just say one real quick thing. We're also not going to take... a draconian approach in that you don't have a mask, this is over.
Right.
We're obviously going to work with people and really emphasize talking to whoever scheduled the event, saying, hey, look, we're seeing a lot of your guests that aren't wearing masks. Could you please, here's a mic, could you please just get on and just say, please wear a mask for our event is going to be shut down. We're taking it very seriously. And so our court supervisors, the same thing, will have to go talk to parents saying, hey, please wear a mask. It's for your kids' game. This game will be shut down if you don't get a mask on.
And I said, and most importantly, is that I think staff's doing a great job of making sure that people know this before their event happens or before junior event happens. So no one should walk into any of these things surprised that we're having to enforce this rule.
Yeah.
So just a couple of things. So Jen, who replaced Laurie, she actually helps Lehigh Recreation, and they're already dealing with this currently, and they don't have any problems. So I think for the most part, people are good about it. You're always going to have to select one or two that are probably going to score some, but they haven't, so I don't think we will. Second, I know that Becky had a couple concerns on a couple of events that were pretty vocal on not agreeing with the mandates, but she's already taken care of it, and they've been very, very receptive of it, and one of them's tomorrow night. So far, people have been just totally understanding, and a lot of people are jumping to severe conclusions, thinking governor's basically saying you cannot have it, so people are wanting to cancel. So we may have some communication from residents with that again. But they're sending out communication to the people saying speak to us first, because once they clear that up with them and say, no, you can have it with more than 10 people, but you have to have masks, people have been very, very receptive, and it's really gone over well. So I don't think we're gonna have problems. We don't have a ton of weddings still. I know we have 10 in December, we were just going over all today, but people have been very receptive, so I don't think it's gonna be an issue.
That's great. And like I said, I think everyone's done a great job of informing people in mass, so it shouldn't be a surprise. And I completely agree. We want to take an approach of help us out here, let's we'll educate, and that final measure of canceling is only if
And we've created a QR code that'll help us for the tracking purposes.
Okay.
So people will be able to scan in, get all that information, and automatically create a spreadsheet for us. So I think we're steps ahead of it. Missy, who's Becky's assistant now, has just been fantastic. Jump right in and help.
It's a QR code that's scanned, just check in on your phone and adds it to a sheet for us to be there. And it should show that you check.
The one thing, I'm sorry to focus on you, because we did not discuss this before. But the other thing that we can also consider, not related to events or anything, is council meeting. If we don't really have any more council meetings, so it's not much of an issue, but we could also look at in the higher space going back to Zoom if it's hard to. I know that the masks are sometimes hard to hear on the microphones, but while we're indoors, we are required to wear them. So that's up to the council. So the town, I can talk about what we could be back to online council meetings during higher space as well.
We have two council meetings the rest of the year.
Yeah.
One in November and one in December. My biggest problem with the masks is I can't read the faces.
So you can't tell everyone to wear it.
I can't tell you because it's hilarious.
My thoughts on this, I think cities do the right thing. I think we're going in the right direction. But my observation is there's a lot of mask fatigue out there. So I honestly hope and pray that we don't have issues. Because I know people that would cause issues. They would say, it's a family wedding. I'm going to go and I'm not going to wear a mask no matter what. Because I don't believe in it. And I'm really, really hoping I'll come across those. Because I don't know where that falls for us. How do we handle that? That's going to be very tricky.
Yeah, it's my own. I would really be hesitant to shut down a wedding if there's just one obstinate person. I would have to see 30% of people just totally rubbing their nose at it. So if there's just one obstinate person, we can do our best. And really, I think I think communicating that to the people that reserve the room that have the vested interest in having the event take place is also critical, and saying, hey, look, I'm seeing a large number of your guests that are wearing masks, like, could you please, and getting them to help lead the charge, rather than it's not coming from us, it's coming from a loved one that you came here to support, it's not the mean government. And to Greg's credit, they've done a great job. Junior Jazz signups have been open. I signed up my kid to play again in January, and I told him, hey, look, you should send out an email to people that have already signed up, because we're not really changing the rules, but we're changing some of the expectations of the consequences. So send him an email saying, hey, look, this is now, with this new mandate, this is now the consequence if there's no mask wearing. He sent that out, and we changed the website so that it says exactly what the new expectations are. So I think going into it, people will have the same expectations. The only real big concern was, as Greg addressed, was the events. We don't have that many of them still. People are reluctant to have big social gatherings, but the few that we do have, I'd say that most of them have been fairly compliant. We do have a few odds and ends, but to Becky's credit, she's worked with them. So we'll see how those go.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of mitigation in place to just avoid that altogether. But
it's the last
thing. If there is anything like that, I'd like council to be aware.
I completely agree with you. And I, from what I've seen, when these issues have come up, not in our city, we haven't had it yet, but it seems like people are being are studying. I know that American Fork High School had a football game recently where they were supposed to have social distancing and masks, and people were not sitting in their assigned seats and together. And the coach halted the game, and he got on the microphone and said, listen, you know, in order to keep sports going, we have to have masks on. You're not sitting where you're supposed to. If you cannot do that, the game's over. We're just done. And from what I was told, people went back to their assigned seats and put their masks on. So it was a reminder that we have to follow this rule. But then once he did, people replied and they were able to finish the game. So I agree. I hope that that's the case as well. Denise and I met with a resident a couple weeks ago. She came to our last council meeting. And one of the things that we also tried to explain is that as a city, we are a political subdivision of the state. So we just do not have the authority to tell the state we're not going to comply with your rules. We, the state, the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gives states a lot of rights. They don't give cities any rights. The Constitution does not give cities any rights. We have whatever rights are granted to us by our state. And so if the state says, this is the new rule and this is what you're going to do, then that's what we're going to do. And I appreciate that the state leaders have said we can continue to have these gatherings as long as there's organizational oversight. Because if you remember back in March and April, it was just shut down. We couldn't do anything other than greater than 10. And now they're saying we're going to extend that and allow these bigger events to happen, but they're putting more responsibility on us to make sure that the rules are being followed. And so I think that's on us to make sure that we're doing our part. But I agree with you. I'm hoping that we don't have any negative effect.
It's sitting back for like 5 minutes of that.
Yeah.
That's okay, they can.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Any questions about the new restrictions or rules or what we're doing? Okay. Well, that was the last item on our agenda, so I'll take a final motion.
I have a motion to be adjourned.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Miller. All those in favor? Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.